welcome back to the latest episode of Tango TV's Where's All the Data, which is the reviewing program where we use musical chords to determine how good a math set really is. Playing off the back, of course, of the Doomworld Megawatt Club thread, which selects which map sets we play in today. Well, it's a first and presumably not a last. We'll be looking at three map sets in particular, rather than just the one large Megawatt. And they are, in order, Coffee Break by our very own Matt Tropiano, and Father Beans by Sean Burkle from 1995, and Double Impact, a recently released-ish map set by Circuit Kings, Ralphus, and Rocky. We're going to start off with Coffee Break, which we did actually stream through, but for some reason, Twitch decided to have a shit fit on the day, and it abolished our stream, so we'll just to take our word for it that we played it. And Tarnsman, what do we think of the gameplay of Fava Beans? No, of...
Fava Beans?
Well, come to that.
Of Coffee Break. Break was a map set that had a very samey gameplay, in that every map was kind of... Same thing with other map sets, kind of like it, in the same vein of short, punchy, fastly made, fast-to-play maps, courses, speedy shit, that every map kind of had this samey... You fight a bunch of stuff, the map ends, the next map, you fight a bunch of stuff. There's always a bunch of stuff attacking you. It's kind of consistent throughout the whole thing. But in the goal of the map set, where it is supposed to just be, here's a map, it's competent in every way, shape, or form, and it does exactly what it needs to do, play one map at a time on a little coffee break, for that, the gameplay was perfect, I think.
Oh, for sure. It's interesting, a coffee break to me, because ordinarily, I think, if it wasn't advertised with that title and with that goal in mind, which is pretty obvious, what the map set is trying to achieve, then I probably would have liked it a little less. It would have been reasonably consistent, still. It was reasonably consistent. But I wouldn't have thought anything special about it. And indeed, I don't think it's a particularly special map set or outstanding in that respect. But I can more easily recommend it on the grounds of what it's trying to be, which is just a simple map so that you can blast through. And it's almost designed to be forgettable, I think. I don't think Matt will frown upon me in saying that. It's a very competent map, so it's almost very tempting to leave it there, honestly. But there were a few hiccups, I thought. I think Matt Tropiano's style does... towards the latter stages of the map set, there were some design elements that started creeping in that I wasn't particularly a fan of, and which threw me back a little bit to his Community Chess 3 effort in Map 29, which I don't think he actually likes that much, if I recall our interview with him. Were there any elements of gameplay that he didn't particularly like?
Yeah, he did definitely play it safe. The gameplay was very static. There wasn't a lot of dynamic stuff going on in the maps. Mm-hmm. Gameplay always felt like it followed the same path of doing something, get something, minimalist backtracking. There wasn't a lot of change-ups to where, you know, this map has a lot of interconnectivity and looping, and you do very little backtracking, and then this map feels more like you journey to a place, and then you journey to another place, and you don't really, you know, come like cross over them very much. You know, there wasn't very much diversity in the style of design, which, you know, does impact the gameplay, because that's how it plays, based on, you know, how the map was crafted, and I think that kind of hurts it in continuous play. But because it's designed just to be like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, sit down for 15 minutes and play map one, mm-hmm. and then 2 days later I'm gonna come back and play map two, as a standalone experience, I don't think that harms the map set, but as a whole, looking at it, I think that, yes, it could have had more diversity in that aspect, and I think that adding that diversity would not impact the, I want a map that I can play in 15 minutes and not touch the rest of the set again for a while, mm-hmm. because it'd be like, well, I'm going to play map one. And, you know, map one was that, all right, that filled, you know, that was satisfying for 15 minutes. And then, you know, having a different map two that was, you know, diverse from the first map wouldn't really impact that design, as long as a self-contained map, it still, you know, fulfilled all those goals.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And the sort of way in which he marketed it was made obvious in many other ways, such as the naming of the maps, which was usually one-word TNT-style simple things like Reservoir or Outpost or whatever. So when you enter them, you know that the coffee break, was the emphasis was on that sort of gameplay, and you didn't really, you weren't prepared to be that critical about it, I guess. And when you were, you always came back to the fact that, yeah, this isn't supposed to be anything particularly special.
And yeah, I would agree with that. I think that, and I think that, I would say it's detrimental to the map set. I would definitely not say that, but I would say that it's, that if I was making something like this, I would, you know, looking at this as a template of something that, you know, you could say this is, you know, what you should do, because it does meet its goals to be a coffee break very well, I think. But at the same time, there are ways that it can be improved, but I wouldn't say that any of those ways are detrimental to the set to the point of really being an issue. Just more so, like, if there was a coffee break too, I'd like to see this.
I would actually like to talk to Matt again about this point a little bit more, because to me it seems like the one big positive that I can give to Napster is that to me it seems like he really does understand his own style enough to know what sort of map set would most benefit, like how we could advertise it a little bit better. Like, he keeps, during the interview that we had with him some months ago, he did talk a lot about his dislike of map 29 and how it dragged out and was very sluggish. And all of the maps of Coffee Break, incidentally, as you can guess, are quite short to medium size, and I feel like when he drags it out to a large map, not saying that Matt can't do large maps, but he does have a tendency to, his gameplay doesn't benefit the map, I think, enough, I think. So I think, to me, Coffee Break is a map set that that plays off his style really well, and it shows an author's understanding of his own style. That's probably my biggest positive I can give it. Gameplay-wise, I can't recommend it on any other grounds other than it's a nice, breezy playthrough that's designed almost to be forgettable. Again, not intended to be a kick in the ribs there. And if that's what you're after, then this is very much the one to download, I think. Any closing arguments for gameplay on your front?
No, that sums it up pretty much exactly. It's a competent map set, and it does what it sets out to be, and nothing more, nothing less.
Like Taken, the film. Have you seen that film?
Yes, I have. Yes, like Taken.
It was sort of bashed by the critics, but I thought it was an unabashed action film that sets out what it needs to do and achieves that. And I went in knowing that, and I came out just as happy.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, there's nothing wrong with a map set that doesn't try to, you know, be grand and spectacular and do anything more than just be a fun little breeze to play.
I'm disappointed I didn't say Liam Neeson, though, as a monster that I could...
Oh, absolutely. That would be a horrifying
monster.
Oh, yeah,
the neck-chopping action would have been. Anyway, we're going to give that, the gameplay front, C major with added 6. Trust me, sounds good. And moving on to the visuals, just briefly, because Matt does have a very distinct visual style. And what I was starting to get out there when we were talking about gameplay, but never quite got around to vocalizing probably, is that I think there is a shift in style from his first half and the second half of Coffee Break, visually. Gameplay-wise, maybe not so much. Visually, certainly. And typically when he goes outside of the tech base sort of thing, he reserves a certain visual style for the interiors of tech bases, and then when he goes to his sort of grungy, brick, watery, sort of swamp-like, sunken temple approach that he does with the second half, and libraries, then the style becomes rather different, I think. Any observations there?
Yeah, I would say that there is some architectural differences. More focus on more, like, bigger architecture shapes being the map than just, like, bitty detailing with the tech base levels.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of more feels like a... like lower tech, that's the best way to put it. It definitely transitions from clean and high tech to dirtier would be, I guess, a way to put it. Doesn't look visually dirtier necessarily, but in terms of structural complexity, simpler in terms of like number of sectors and line depths used, but still architecturally complex. I think with the tech bases, there's a lot of computer inlays, there's a lot of ceiling lights, all that stuff, you know, standard tech base fare detailing. And then when you get to the like temple-y levels with the brownstone and all that, it's more structural detailing, so that there is a distinction between tech base and you know, organic, old-school, roomy area.
I found myself much preferring... I guess much is too strong. I did prefer the his first batch of maps visually to the other batch towards the end of the episode. And I think it's largely because we use the phrase playing it safe, and I think to come to his visual style, when he's doing that sort of thing, he plays it safe to an extra degree. I think he really has honed a style there that I just sort of want him to edge away from just a little bit. I understand that with a coffee break, it's not supposed to be a standing out or anything. But it did begin to drag, and it sort of, you get to a point where the visuals really lend to the gameplay. Like, if the gameplay is beginning to drag itself and the visuals complement that, then it sort of doubles up and it becomes a bit more dragging than it needs to be. And I found that was doubly the case with the second half of the map, so I didn't enjoy it quite as much playing through that as I did the first half. But it wasn't detrimental enough for me to really change my mind about the map set, and so I guess I could just leave it at that, honestly. Any other mentions on visuals up front for Coffee Break?
No, not really. Its visuals are competent, and... like the gameplay, they don't really, try and stand out or do anything spectacular beyond just being what they need to be.
Cool. G major with flat fifth and an added sixth. Trust me again, it sounds okay. I've tried to select chords there which, don't sound too outré, if you know what I mean. Not really out there very much. But definitely nice and competent and nice sounding. Not something you'd walk into it and buy as an LP, maybe necessarily, but maybe something you check out on YouTube. Anyway, Fava Beans by Sean Burkle was the next maps that we played. Of course, that was from 1995. I erroneously mentioned it as being from 1994 at the beginning of our stream through, but what do you think of the gameplay for that one?
Run of the mill.
Oh, really?
For modern standards, I didn't think it was too, unique in terms of just it's a Doom 1 map set. I guess for 19... It definitely is not an E1 replacement that just seeks to perfectly emulate E1. With,
right. You wouldn't throw in the same batch as all the other E1 replacements. No. What makes it stand out, then?
It stands out... in that it definitely does its own thing. It's not afraid of having E2 stuff thrown in. Mm-hmm. It definitely, it's for 1995, and this is the really thing that really makes it stand out, mm-hmm. is the fact that it doesn't look like it's from 1995 at all. It's so much more confident and... Mm-hmm. just well done to the point where it's like, oh, and that really makes the map set stand out.
For sure. One of the things that I guess will come to many people's minds when they hear 1994, 1995 is, well, they'll think of bad maps for a start, but they'll also think of certain motifs that are unique to that time, certain experimental traits or something. And for me, Fava Beans sort of rode the boundary between very competent map set that one would think highly of even by modern standards, really. Or at least they think reasonably well of. But that combined the best parts of experimental 1994 and incorporated them into the map set. Some of these were more overt than others. I mean, you had the BFG just lying around in map 2, which threw some people off, and the fact that you had all of Knee Deep in the Dead's rocket stock in one location, also in map 2. You found that secret. Those are sort of really odd and off, but honestly, I thought all that blend, that marriage of experimentalism, which wasn't too profound, but which was enough to make it interesting, with competent design, was what really made Fava Beans stand up for me, which I think is why it's so often mentioned and regarded today. Well, to some extent, anyway.
Oh, absolutely. I would absolutely agree with that, and I would say that that is what makes Fava Beans stand out, is because it has that kind of, free experimentalism that you associate with the early era of Doom mapping, mm-hmm. that it does do, BFG on map 2, things like that, or breaking free of, nowadays when somebody makes an E1 map set, most of the E1 replacements I can think of, you have, I don't know, I'm trying to think of ones besides, like, Doom 2 the way it did. Danny Bubinga made an E1 replacement recently. Simply Phobos, stuff like that, where people stick to the E1 theme mm-hmm. a lot, mm. and it like, doesn't really break, you know, throwing E2 stuff in there, or, you know, really doing anything besides this is an E1 map set, it's going to feel like E1, mm-hmm. and I'm not just going to, you know, just make it tech bases, and I'm going to throw some E2 stuff in there if I feel like it. Whereas Fava Beans kind of felt more like, I'm just going to make not E1 maps, I'm just going to make tech bases because I've played Doom and I like tech bases. And I like how the Doom style does tech bases, but I'm not going to, you know, worry about emulating, you know, just tech bases. I'm not going to worry about not throwing in Barons or any of those other things. This is going to be, you know, my maps that happen to be tech bases. And I think that Fava Beans has a lot in common with Double Impact in that way.
Oh, sure. I actually would have been very interested to see the map set Sean Burkle would have made had he attempted an E3 replacement, for example. Because, I mean, just thinking of what you were saying there, it occurs to me that even back in 1995, actually, for a different reason back in 1995, people would have been inclined to make E1 replacements. Because, I mean, you have a very solid and dependable texture base in which to select. It's very easy. It's much easier to slot into that groove if you want to make a replacement for it. And so I think, really, those are the best ingredients for Sean Burkle to really come with the maps that he did. I mean, I think if it was an E3 replacement, we would have been seeing more of that 1994, those experimental wacky elements, and perhaps less of the polish that we see for E1. Would have been a groove that was less easier to settle into, I think.
I would agree with that. I'd honestly think, yeah. I think that with E1, people, yeah, have a Romero's very clean design that they mm-hmm. can easily emulate.
Mm-hmm.
And, sure. Yeah, that's not really present with you know, Sandy had a lot more wackiness going on that would make it feel more 1994 than it does.
Some of the more controversial points of the gameplay front, some of them not so controversial and just unanimously agreed upon as disappointing, such as the E1M8 ending, which really was strange to me, because we think of Stocky 1M8, and it's not just two barons, it's two barons plus uniquely interesting arena with specters and barrels. And, you know, it's, yeah, at least there's some sort of fight there, and here it was just two barons, which is extremely strange considering, as we've noted, that E2 elements were used throughout the map set, and we'd actually already encountered barons at that point, including two, I think, in the previous map. So I don't know what Burkle was getting at there, for it to just be two barons and nothing more, and it was extremely anticlimactic, and it's indefensible, Tarnsman.
Oh, yeah, it definitely was quite odd, and definitely a low point in the map set, I agree.
E1M9 also was commented upon as being too short, but honestly, I really liked it for that fact. I liked the fact that it was punchy, I liked the fact that it was secret-laden, and honestly, it threw me back to stock E2M9, which was just, this is the secret map, this is the gimmick, you can leave if you like, just walk out the door sort of thing. And I think it needs to be done more, honestly. I think people have a tendency to expect the exit to come at a set point or later, and they're thrown off by it coming too soon, and don't take into consideration maybe the fact that it was just a small, reason-sized map that they could have for exploratory purposes.
I would agree.
Cool.
I'd say if I did have one complaint with the gameplay of Fava Beans is, going back to the secret map, I actually kind of would have liked to see the plasma rifle only be available in the secret map.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I think that would have just, I don't know, would have made it feel special.
Never mind the BFG map 2?
Never mind the BFG, no, BFG map 2, plasma rifle.
Yeah, that can stay.
That can stay. Plasma rifle only in a map, the secret map.
Uh-huh. Fava Beans then is going to be getting a D minor with a flat fifth and an augmented fifth. You can try that out now on your harpsichord. I guarantee you, it sounds quite swish. Now, in the visual department, I guess there's only so much we can talk about here for Fava Beans, because we have already covered it when we were talking about gameplay. So I guess we can just reassert how competent the visuals were, Tarnsman.
They were outstandingly competent for the era in which it was made, to the point of I was honestly surprised that the visuals were so well done. And there were some weird things going on. Like, there was that lighting area in, I think it was map 7, where there was that, like, sharp directional lighting.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it just looked weird and bizarre, and it was done in a way that you wouldn't see it today. Like, it just cut off and, like, almost McGee levels of just, all right, the sector ends, so the lighting's cutting off, oh well.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like that, that was definitely prevalent, but it never, like, it never, ever, I would say, looked ugly, just bizarre.
Right. It's interesting to me, because when we were just speaking there before, on the gameplay front, about how it's fortunate that he stuck to the one design. Or how much better that benefit that made it a cleaner product than if he went for perhaps the E3 or E2 route. I found that the only visuals that sort of struck me as slightly odd was when he introduced certain E2 elements or elements that you wouldn't see in Romero stock E1. I think in M5 there was a strange comp spam pit surrounding the accent with some strange weird cutoffs there. And everything else up to that point, from what I can recall, was pretty standard E1 affair, and then when you got to that point, it sort of looked odd in a... Well, yeah, it looked very, very strange indeed. But really, these are splitting hairs, minor complaints, and I don't think it should deter anyone from inspecting the map set if they haven't already. So, visuals, G minor with augmented fifth. Yeah. Woo. Do it. Awesome. Finally, we move on to Double Impact, which is probably the bulkiest map set to play through. Not in map number, I think there's only 9 maps there. But by Circuit Kings, Ralphus, and Rock King. What's the gameplay like, Tarnsman?
Fun as crap, and well done.
Crap
is fun. An excellent use of the stock Doom bestiary in a way that's just not seen very much nowadays. And really, really just goes all out, is not afraid to be bullshit hard at times, and just is great and awesome and fully would recommend it with zero complaints, even for the final map, which I know a lot of people disliked. I absolutely love E1M8 and think it's great and wonderful and the perfect way to end your map set.
And you shall shun those who disagree with you?
I will absolutely shun them and just inform them how wrong they are.
Objectively speaking. Very good, Tarnsman. I'm glad that you can take your stand. Of course, we had the Rock King on the stream through with us. There were a couple of things he said that interested me, and one of them was how almost resentful he was, unsure as to whether or not if he put too many monsters into the maps, he and Ralphus, if it was too overladen. I can begin to see where his concerns come from, because although you say that the Doom 1 bestiary was used quite well, typically when you include a map in Doom 1 which has far too many monsters in its type, it does begin to drag out, because there's only so much you can do with the Doom 1 bestiary, because they're pretty one-dimensional in their functions, right? Just right. Variants thereof. Kicker Demons and Barons really just, you know, come from the same ballpark. But you think there's something that the map set did that made them work rather well. Do you think you can pinpoint that down a little bit better?
I would say that I think the spam worked very well, simply because the Doom 1 bestiary is easy to cleave through, especially when provided a large amount of munitions, to the point where you can just spam them, and shotgun guys en masse are pretty difficult and, you know, intriguing to fight, especially in interesting environments like dark, blinky mazes.
Oh.
And I think that's what was definitely done best in Double Impact, is that it just went balls to the wall and was unafraid of being unabashedly hard and difficult and just didn't care.
It does call to mind a certain criticism I had, which was that there aren't enough goddamn rockets.
Because
you were saying, I mean, it's to cleave through them is the funnest part, I guess, of the Doom and Bestiary, because they're so light on health. But then you want to have fun, right? Sometimes, I mean, we have maps of those size, and they are quite large maps, medium to large, with that many monsters in them. You want to be able to diversify your means of dispatching them. There were barrels aplenty, and that was fun. Barrels are fun. But some rockets would have been very nice, just to really... Sometimes it's nice just to, you know, fuck challenge, just I want to blow shit up. And then when I run out of ammo, then I can start worrying about dying again. So I feel that the maps could have been loosened up a little bit more there, having more rockets to expend. And honestly, I mean, could have even gone the plasma route. Was there a plasma gun in
Double? There was.
There was? Oh. Well, I'm just fucking wrong. There you go. Otherwise, I thought it was fairly competent. I don't want to overuse that word. I don't think it was... It is unique, I guess, in that it does stand out from the standard E1 fan. You definitely wouldn't, like Fava Beans, I don't think you'd put it in the standard E1 map replacement camp because of that gameplay that it strives for with mass monsters. It's not slaughtered because it does stick quite faithfully to E1 layouts and that there are... then they're not very open. It's more of a sort of doing one corridor crawling exercise, but diversified enough such that it remains interesting. The layouts are quite interconnected. It strikes me as, I hate to use the word again, but a very competent map set, with the exception of E1 M8, which is its own map, and which people have criticized. Why do you like it so much?
Because it's a fun map.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. That's really the only reason I like it so much. It's just, it's really fun.
Mm-hmm. I think people criticized it because it wasn't consistent with the rest of the map, so it was just sort of... It was just such a sudden departure.
I don't think consistency is necessary ever in Doom. Doom is a game about being fun, and if you just want to totally change, you know, suddenly you're playing, you know, tech-based, McTech-based map set, and randomly in the middle of it, there's a map where every texture is pink, and you're upside down, and it's a total departure from everything. I don't give a fuck as long as that map's fun to play.
Sure. That's kind of interesting. I guess to me, possibly the reason that the criticism could have come up is because it straddled the line between being different and being a boss map, and then sort of trying to stick to the theme that the rest of the map set had. I think if it's a massive departure, then people would accept it. Like in the same sense that E1 M8 is a sock, Doom is. I mean, because that's, well, that, for a start, it's the Sandy Peterson map, so I mean, it's got none of the Romero design in it. So that's just such a departure. But E1 M8 of Double Impact retains the same sort of visual style that the rest of the map set does, but it happens to have four cyberdemons prowling around, I guess. So, to me, I think that's where the criticism might come from. Or, it could just be that people are wrong. Like you said yourself.
It's people are wrong. No, it's because people are... No, it's more because I think that... I could be wrong here, but I think the biggest problem is that it's not a departure in terms of... like, visual style, but it is a departure in terms of layout and setup. Like, it is very arena-y. It is a gigantic departure, in my opinion. I mean, it is extremely arena-oriented, when you really think about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, most of the Double Impact layouts have a degree of connectivity, and they're not... It's not the same way at all, I think. They're a lot more flowing and... not, like, just a central hub with a bunch of symmetrical areas attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, E1 M8 is just, it's about fighting some cyberdemons.
That's how you'd sell it? On the box?
Yeah. The whole map is unabashedly that concept.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't say that it's not a departure, because it is, but... I don't think it needs to necessarily be a radical departure, because it's designed to be a boss map, and it succeeds.
No, of course not. I think I was trying to make sense of why it was that people were coming up with this complaint. I don't think, actually, for that matter, I've read into their complaint so much, simply. I know that some people disliked it, so that could just be me not doing my homework. But anyway, something else that we could talk about on the gameplay front is the fact that I think these are the first major single-player maps that both Ralphus and Rock King have collaborated on. I could be incorrect in saying that. Certainly at one point I thought there was just one of them, but can you see any sort of deathmatch elements in them? Could you say that, okay, these couple of people who had done deathmatch before, primarily, and then it shifted into single player?
Kinda? There is a lot of deathmatchy, like, don't box a player into a dead end, always give them room to move stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't say it's necessarily, like, super deathmatch layouts.
No.
Like, not to an absolute extreme. Just kind of the whole open connectivity thing that's sure. going on. And that's about it. I mean, like, it's definitely a Rock King map set. Like, it plays like a Rock King map. So, there's that. But overall, I don't know. It just... I wouldn't say that it is extremely deathmatchy. I think the transition from deathmatch to single player was handled quite well.
Mm-hmm. So here we come to the visuals, which is, I guess, unlike the previous two maps that we've been discussing, it does sort of stand apart. What's the comment there, Donson?
On the visuals, honestly, I didn't remember much of the visuals other than that it looked D1 and it was competent. I don't think the visuals, besides the awesome lighting in the exteriors, I don't really think the visuals stood out all that much. The lighting did a lot. Like, the lighting carried a lot, but that's about it.
I think I could actually be more critical there, honestly, myself. I remember saying around the E1M3, around that area when we were discussing visuals briefly with Rock King, he condemned me for saying that I thought there was, again, I used the word competent. I really need to stop saying that. But that was more or less the case. It didn't stand out to me as particularly noteworthy, but merely accommodating for the sort of for what was going on. However, there were some very interesting moments. I mean, if I think about Double Impact on the whole visually, it does all sort of blend together in my mind. But there are some standout moments, like E1M4's sort of viney area. There's some great shadow casting on the outdoors. So sometimes they went flat out strange, like the E1M4's lamp lineup on the exterior. Actually, I found out with the gameplay as well. Sometimes in both the visual and the gameplay department, they decided to disembark from the rather standard fare that encompasses the map set and then just go slightly wacky. So visuals, like I just mentioned, that are sort of the lamp lineup. And then in the gameplay department, you get to the end of E1M7, and there's that Baron Horde, which just decides to come in. And then, of course, E1M8, which is its own story in itself. So, to me, it was very much a story of a large, bulky map set, which was accented by some very bizarre, but acceptable, and interesting, and positive, visual and gameplay elements. I don't think there's much else to comment on there. I think we could probably leave it at that. Did I give a score for the gameplay? I didn't, did I? We're going to give that an E-flat major, with added 7th and a diminished 9th. Oh yeah, baby! And visuals, just, I don't know, fucking C major 9th. Let's try it. Make a symphony out of that shit. I'm pretty sure it'll be a top seller. Top 40, no question. Townsman?
That sums it up. We played a bunch of just good map sets this month. Mm-hmm. Not outstanding, not terrible, not bad. I would like a shitty map set to bitch about, but I'm not going to complain that we got good map sets. I love good map sets, and I think that that's what we got this month, is we got good map sets, and all of them were fun to play. They were brisk, which was nice. There were no draggy moments, even Double Impact, which is very difficult, but it never, like, feels punishingly so. And that's why I think Double Impact really wins in the difficulty department for me.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it's difficult, but it doesn't feel like unnecessarily difficult. Or it's not, like, self-indulgent and just overly, like, bloated in mm-hmm. the difficulty. And it's not slaughtery. It's just nice. And
do you think between something like Double Impact and Coffee Break, if both of those map sets were to extend themselves to a full 32, or in the case of the Double Impact, a full 27, or what have you, or 36 maps, that one would be better off than the other? that you would prefer the gameplay style of one? Because I myself, I think if Double Impact was something that stretched to much more than 9 maps, it's really start to wear thin on me.
I would say both of them would, but that's if I played them continuously. As a standalone, just like one map by map basis, mm-hmm. no. But yes, as a full pack, if it didn't diversify, I would say I would agree with that. Coffee Break, I'd say, would be a lot easier to justify just being the same thing for 32 maps because it, you know, advertises that that's exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But with, with Double Impact, episodes 2 and 3 would have to change some things up. And I don't think they really could because you've run out of Doom Bestiary and ways to use it at that point.
This has been Where's All the Data, episode 3, covering 3 map sets. And future, I think it will be 2. That's the monochrome mapping project, which is, I think it's currently in a beta, the first or second at the moment. And that's 23 maps in length, and also Stardate series of numbers, 20XB or something. Pulling some numbers out of my hat there. Which is by Mr. Ribix, which I think we've actually played before, Tarnsman. We'll give it another run through for review, indeed, for the Where's All the Data stream through. And once again, you can expect another series of reviews at the end of the month. Thanks for tuning in. This has been Alfonso and Tarnsman. Sayonara.